Welcome to the Minute of Eight Game Podcast, episode 318. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Happy Father's Day Eve.
Graham Thickens.
Happy Saturday.
And Phil Wilson.
I like Father's Day Eve. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we don't get enough, we don't get
enough.
You know, we kind of get the short shrift.
Well, what
do you mean? So we might as well have an Eve, too.
Sure. Yeah. And we did almost as much work as the moms did having the kids.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You go ahead and keep believing that.
I really.
Well, I'll tell you what. When our first was born, Elizabeth, I was telling a story afterwards about, oh my God, I'm trying to read the Sunday paper, and Michelle, I had to keep getting up and helping her, coaching her through her breathing, and she's just looking at me like, if looks could kill. And that's the last time I told that story.
Yeah, no kidding.
You might want to keep that one in the closet.
Yeah, every few minutes I had to stand up and put the paper down and go for it went on for like 8 hours. But anyway, so what's new?
What's new?
Kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's summertime.
It's that time. It's that time of year that things are a little slow in the old
community.
But as we've said many times over the last 2 years, it's surprising how much is going on in the summer when it used to be really dead.
Yeah.
Now it's just kind of
a little to do with, you know, the amount of little startup meetings and things like that are out there. So
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
Yep.
Kind of fun. Let's see.
Yeah. What's going on with, investment stuff in Minnesota?
Oh, big news.
Yeah?
Yes.
Like what?
Yeah.
With Lead Pages, more money.
Yeah.
I did see that. They got a bucket load of money. Listen to you.
$27 million.
Yeah. On top of them saying they haven't spent any of their previous VC money.
Oh, my gosh.
So talk about a war chest. And, you know, they have said they might do some acquisitions. Well, yeah, I guess they would be. What else would you use all that money for? Yeah, well, they've already, except more hiring, but, you know, they've ramped up.
So what's the other money for? If this is for the...
what I'd love to know. They do great parties, and they're going to do a great conference, which we could even slip into our listing of upcoming events, but it's not till October.
What's the topic of the conference?
It's all about how to sit
on your cash.
Yeah. Right.
Well, they should
raise money.
They should spend a little bit of their money and see if they can snag leadpages.com instead of .net.
Tell me about it. I keep wondering.
I wonder who owns it.
Well, whoever owns it, the price has been going up, and it just went up a lot more.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, they're going to do a conference in October on, you know, all about landing page optimization, you know, conversion. They're really about converting leads into dollars, you know, sales. So yeah, they're already at 120 plus employees, and they actually said they're going to need to add a couple more floors in the building they're in because they're maxed out there. So, you know, they continue to hire, and, you know, they got a huge vote of confidence from the Ohio VC fund called Drive Capital, which led this round and will have a guy on their board. And, you know, that's some ex-Silicon Valley guys that got tired of the Valley and went back home. And
Mark talked about these guys, yeah.
Yeah, Mark Cavami is one of them. Do you remember Mark?
Sure.
He came from a venture capital family. Actually, his father was a big time VC in the early days, and they've got Columbus on the map as far as a startup community, and you know are doing a lot of funding of all kinds of stuff, and increasingly are looking towards our direction. So I believe this is their first investment in Minnesota. I could be wrong.
Well, it's
certainly their first significant one.
Yeah. So. Well, what I thought was interesting was there was a former CTO for a fairly large company here I had lunch with this week. And the topic of that 27 million came up for Lead Pages. And he looked at me and he goes, you know, what do you know about Lead Pages? And I said, well, before I do, what's your gut tell you about the 27 million and a landing page company? And he just looked at me and he went, well, it's a point solution. And I said, well, actually it's not. It's a, they are positioning it as a platform, but you know, they got WordPress integration, they've got Facebook integration and all kinds of different features to the product that really does position it as a platform.
Oh, and yeah.
So that's, I'm sure that's what's everybody's seeing is, you know, the ability to have this thing out there and connect.
Oh, yeah.
Have it be the front end that connects all the back end stuff.
Oh, yeah. I had one colleague on Facebook. I got into a little discussion on Facebook about this, and he said, what are they going after, HubSpot now?
Oh, great.
And I thought, whoa, that's that would be a big-time move. But then Leif Larson jumped in and said, well, that's a great strategy. You know, bother them enough that they'll buy you.
That's a good point. Well, but HubSpot takes it from the back end out. And Lead Pages is taking it from the front end back. And I think it's a much different approach.
Yeah. Well, you know, but maybe who knows? There'll be consolidation here. The VCs are betting big on these guys because they are an extremely rapidly growing SaaS startup.
Yeah.
And somebody posted they're the fastest growing company in Minnesota, which I have no doubt. And the lead VC on the first round who continues to participate is Seth Levine. And he told me that they're the fastest growing SaaS startup that they've ever invested in at Foundry Group. So it's a pretty big story.
Yeah, it is.
I did pop over to the leadpages.com site, and it's just one simple phrase on it says, you are about to become more productive, and that's it.
That's it, yeah.
That's it, and yeah, so it's like...
And that guy's about to become more rich.
Probably so.
Well, I'll tell you what,
somebody's got to do it, right?
Whenever I see Mike O'Connor posting on Facebook about his Tesla P85D and how he has created a solar array and all of that, it's like, thank you, domain names. You know, he sold some great ones that he bought back in their very early 90s, and the guy's done well.
Yeah.
Yeah, did he have television.com or
he sold haven.com to a British publisher for, you know, a lot, well over seven figures. And I think I told you that I have got WSJB.com, and it was the web and Stephen Jay Bohr, so I thought that was really clever back in like 96. But I had somebody reach out to me to buy it, and I asked them to they're a small radio station, I think in Vermont. And so they said, and then they emailed me back, well, you know, we don't know what they're even worth. And so I sent back an email and said, well, I think $1,500 to $2,000. Roughly is about where it's at. And they sent an email back and said, we're a nonprofit. We were thinking more like $30 to $50.
God love them.
No, I think I'll hang on to it.
Yeah. So, because, yeah, there's like at least one other person that would be interested in that. One other group would be interested in that, like an AM station.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Well, you know what though, for $30 to $50, I could probably buy a Tesla Chrome name badge or something, you know, at the
holding on to it. It's just so you get you gotta have Tesla money. I see.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand.
I turned down $50,000 for one of mine back in about 98, I think it was.
Really?
Thinking I could get 100. Yeah. And Mikey O'Connor advised me, there's only so much real estate on the web. I'd never shamed him with that, and I would never do that. But I thought, yeah, it's worth 100.
Yeah.
Well, the dot bomb came, and all of a sudden it was worth nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I heard that.
Want to know what it was?
What?
And it was European buyers, venturezone.com.
Actually, that's kind of cool.
It was.
What were you going to do with it?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking it could have been I could have created some sort of a content site back in the day, but then I decided, no, I'm going to sell it. And I never did. So there went my Porsche, my poor man's Porsche.
Your poor man's Porsche.
Oh, man.
It wouldn't have bought much of a Porsche, but it would have bought something.
What about a VW?
Yeah, well, there you go. Really nice VW.
So we've got a guest today, so let's just briefly mention the last couple stories and then bring on our guest, shall
Sounds
we?
Sounds like a plan. We shall.
Well, the one story we have to mention is MnVest.
Right.
Which who posted this story? This is a good one.
Yeah.
I didn't know that crowdfunding was illegal in Minnesota, but apparently it was.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore.
That's right.
Yep. So the
it'll still take a while, but to shake out. But it's official now that Dayton signed the bill.
Yep. But it's essentially a Kickstarter for equity investing.
Right.
And there's going to be a privately run portal where business and entrepreneurs can connect with others and share their ideas. And I'm assuming, hey, can we get some money? I think it's a good idea. I really do.
Yeah.
So.
Why not? How bad can it be, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then the co-working space is heating up again. I did a post. I got a ping from Assemble down in Chicago, and they're opening their third location in Minneapolis on 15 South 5th Street.
Yeah, and so I saw that.
That should be pretty interesting.
Is this their third location in the country? It's not their third in Minneapolis.
They have two in Chicago, and then one up here.
Okay. Oh, I thought you meant they had three now in Minneapolis for a minute there.
No.
I thought I've not heard of these people, but.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification, Graham. Because that would have been bad.
There are a lot of co-working spaces around town, and we don't necessarily hear a lot about them, but they've cropped up all over.
Yeah.
And for a minute there, I thought these guys were already here. But this sounds like a pretty big-time operation spent a fair amount of money to renovate space downtown.
Yeah, $1.2 million.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's bring on our guest. Why don't you set him up, Mr. Thickens?
Well, sure. Yeah. Marty Weatherall is Director of Innovation at the Fallon Agency, one of our largest and best-known advertising agencies in town. He's been there many years, but he does a lot in the startup community, and he volunteered his services to be a judge at the Twin Cities Startup Weekend youth event recently. I believe it was a week ago yesterday, and judged a bunch of teams of high school students, I believe, and he'll tell us all about it. It was at the Minnetonka Public Schools somewhere, and there were pitches over 3 days for youth entrepreneurs. So, he said it was great. He was really impressed with them, and he can tell us all about it.
And we'll get an update on something else he's been working on. So let's bring him on.
Sure.
Mr. Marty Weatherall.
Marte.
Hello.
Are you there?
How are you there, man?
I'm good. I'm good. Can you guys hear me okay?
You sound great. Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent. I hope that the children won't be yelling in the background, but I think I've got them on silent for at least a good 10 minutes.
That's okay. Well, you know, just mute if you're going to slap them up upside the head or something, you know.
That's good advice. All right. I'll do that.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So what's
for Daddy's Day weekend?
Yeah, for Father's Day, slap your kids around because they interrupt the podcast.
Exactly.
So what's new?
Lots of stuff. Been busy as ever, but excited to be talking with you guys again. Just been running around doing my starter kit thing at Fallon, as we've talked about before, and had a really great opportunity last weekend to judge Twin Cities Startup Weekend Youth, which was amazing.
Well, tell us about that. You know, we've been a part of Startup Weekend for quite some time. You know, we've been aware of it. So tell me about the difference between Startup Weekend and Startup Weekend for Youth.
I'd never had a chance to attend one of the grown-up Startup Weekends. Actually, heard a lot about them and talked with people about the format and everything. But I got an invitation to help judge this Startup Weekend Youth event, which I believe was one of only a handful that have happened around the world. It's part of the Startup Weekend franchise, but it's designed for juniors and seniors in high school, and which was remarkable to me. But it actually didn't happen on a weekend. It happened Wednesday through Friday, not this week, but last week. So they basically school let out and for summer, and they had put out a notice that they were going to do this Startup Weekend. And miraculously, amazingly, I don't know if I would have ever done this, but these kids who had just been let out for summer decided to spend 2-3 days, you know, gathered making startup ideas, advised by advisors, and present them all that last Friday night to us judges and show what they've done, just like a normal Startup Weekend, but they were high school kids. So again, I don't think they've done that many of them, maybe 8 or 10 around the world. And it was really remarkable. I couldn't have been more impressed.
How many schools were represented, Marty?
That's
just
a good question.
Minnetonka?
It was, so it happened out at a Minnetonka High School facility. It wasn't on at the school itself, but I think they have some, you know, kind of campus buildings out there. And I think the word went out through Minnetonka, West Tonka, Eden Prairie, trying to remember a couple others, but I think that was the concentration of kids. There's a DECA class, I believe, at Minnetonka, where a lot of the kids were getting kind of a running start because they go through the DECA program, which I never did in high school. But yeah, it was a concentration in those in that region. But I believe the invitation was open to any high school kids in the area. It just maybe didn't travel as well beyond those concentrations.
Well, one of the things I noticed is on Wednesday, there were these, for 2 hours actually, warm-up sessions where you know, it gets you thinking about startups, the lean startup process, and interacting with fellow participants. So it's sort of, you know, just connecting everybody socially and all of that, but it's also getting their minds in the right place to sort of embrace this whole thing, right?
Well, yes. And I would argue that their minds are already natively in this place. Okay. It was really remarkable to see, and maybe I missed, you know, I wasn't there for some of the rev up. I was told that initially there was one kid from all these kids that had gathered who was willing to kind of get up and kind of pitch his idea that he had walking in, which I think compared to the other Startup Weekends I've heard about, you know, a lot of the people show up with ideas and they're hoping that their ideas kind of get rallied around and picked. It seemed like there was a, you know, very few ideas on the way in, but once they started getting coached up on how to identify a problem and a solution for a problem, they were really sort of, you know, talked through that. What I was attributing kind of, you know, a lean startup kind of mentality, they were getting a quick training in that. And then all of a sudden the ideas really started to flow, it seemed like. So by that time they ended up having, I think 30 odd ideas that got shared and posted. And then at the end of, by Friday night, there were 7 teams with 7 ideas that presented. But I really do believe that the way these kids are growing up and just, you know, their existence, I said, as I was giving just my introduction at the beginning, when the judges were all saying hello, I said, you know, when I was in high school, MVP meant most valuable player, you know, for a sports team. And these kids were all talking MVP, MVP from a minimum viable product standpoint, and natively thinking that way, like natively thinking about the speed of turnaround. And it wasn't just software ideas. There were hardware ideas in this thing and hardware prototypes in this thing. So even just the speed of iteration that we're seeing in the hardware space has trickled down to our youth. It was really amazing.
Is there any recap anywhere on what those 7 presenters were?
You know, that's a good question. I will dig that up and I'll make sure you guys have it for the show notes if it exists. Stephen Welvang has been really the organizing force, I believe, locally for Startup Weekend, or at least maybe more recent ones. He did an EdTech focused one not long ago that I heard about. And then he was involved in this Startup Weekend youth event. He's with the, I want to make sure I get the name right.
Edu-Celerate. Yep. And yeah. He's an education.
Yeah, Edu-Celerate North.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So he was really kind of the reason this whole thing happened. And then a guy that I know, he was at Fallon years ago. Now he's at Target. And in between, he was out in Seattle working for the Startup Weekend organization, a great guy named Seijin Takamura, and he was involved as well. And then there was a, they actually brought in a facilitator from New York, who I guess that's a standard, but a guy named Roger Osorio, came in and really remarkable work with these kids to get them as far along as they were. And, like I said, I mean, there were 7 presentations. They were coached to really kind of have one kid, be the main presenter. And so they all kind of followed these guidelines of presenting that they were coached up on. But the first two out of the gate were hardware with prototypes, working prototypes. Huh. And I'm saying, where am I? You know, I'd never imagined to see that. And then there were some startup, you know, some sort of standard software things, not a developer heavy crowd, of kids, which was interesting. But so natural in coming up with just interface ideas, really beautiful interface ideas for their software demos, and figuring out ways to even create a software demo where I think the average person off the street would just be, you know, completely lost in that. And so I will make sure that if there is a recap, to give you guys a chance to share those ideas out.
That'd be great. Is there one that sticks out?
Well, we gave there were 2 awards that the judges had to decide on, and they gave an award to every team, different sort of, thematic awards based on how the teams work together and so forth across the course of the 2-3 days. But there was, we were asked to figure out, you know, which team we were most impressed on with their MVP, their prototype, and then, which was just the best, product market fit idea. So, you know, those two could be different, and they were. But I would, I'm not sure how much I can explain or describe. I apologize. I should have figured that out coming into this. But the product market fit idea was actually a retail business, a food business. And they just touched upon something that just seemed like such a relevant idea. Kind of one of these sort of in the spirit of a yogurt lab where, you know, customize your own food, but in a different category that hasn't been tried before. And they actually fed us. They fed the judges with
fun,
which, you know, I guess it worked because we picked them as the product market fit winner. And then for the prototype, it was actually, this was the first one out of the gate, which I couldn't believe, but it's camping and outdoors hardware designed around making your campfire behave much better. And they had this thing built, welded, working, and video of it actually working. And I talked to the founder afterward, the kid that presented, and their team was trying multiple different design types to try to solve this problem. And so in the course of 2-3 days, they were able to weld and build metal prototypes of different types, and then hone the one that was working best, and then have it ready for this presentation Friday night. And then in between, there were apps, there were, you know, software ideas, more hardware ideas. But I guess, you know, the future looks bright from what I can see.
So did the kids have to fabricate all of their prototypes and code all their apps, or did they were their mentors there to help them?
There were mentors, and I believe that somebody with access to the shop facilities at Minnetonka High School or you know the welding machines, you know, it was instrumental in helping the kids with that camping idea that I was talking about. And I believe there were some other mentors there helping from everything from, you know, how to make the prototype come to life to thinking about business model. You know, they were all asked to do that too. You know, think about, go out and talk to people about the solution that you've come up with to your problem. Is the problem really real? They were actually iterating on the idea over the course of a couple of days based on the feedback they were getting out in the field. So they all went out into the world and did that. I think the coaches and the mentors had a lot to do with how they sort of conducted themselves over the course of the 2 days. But, you know, definite evidence of, in an extremely compressed time frame of thinking you had an idea based on a problem you thought existed, going out, finding out the problem was different, shifting your idea to that, and then being able to present that back to us in a very you know, clear way. I mean, there was some nervousness. These kids aren't, you know, experienced presenters, but for what it was, pretty remarkable. And then I talked to one of the teams after, and they were from the DECA class at Minnetonka, I believe. And this was just one of the ideas that they had. They started rattling off these other ideas that they'd been working on. And I just was amazed, like the ideas don't stop. And, you know, some of the other ideas that I'd heard from them, I actually like better than the one they presented, but really remarkable. The one thing that stood out to me, and you know me with my, with StarterKit and with my interest in crowdfunding, you know, they were all asked to talk about marketing their ideas once, you know, as they were presenting them. And there was a lot of talk about just using like Instagram and social and these platforms that they understand very well. I don't think they've ever had to market anything on those platforms. So they, I think they were thinking of it being just sort of this natural way that they use it in their day-to-day lives. None of them mentioned Kickstarter. And even with these hardware ideas, none of them mentioned Kickstarter, you know, just naturally as a part of their presentation. And I said, even after I'd introduced myself and said that I'm working on these crowdfunding ideas, and I made sure they all knew that it's a marketing platform as much as it is a fundraising platform. I think they were all sort of just naturally thinking of it as fundraising. But you know, so they understand certain things. There's certain things they haven't really been exposed to. But despite all of that, came with some great ideas, well thought out. There were really no duds in the bunch.
Nice. That sounds great.
Hey, how about an update on your Expo 2023 adventure? Maybe just describe again real quickly what it is, and then
sure. Well, I wish I had a better update in terms of just knowing more, but
okay.
You know, we spoke last, I guess it was late last summer, about a starter kit project that we were doing out of Fallon where we help crowdfunding projects, and this was a very unique one, an effort to bring the World's Fair not just back to the U.S., but to Minnesota in 2023, which would be the first time it's been back in the U.S. That effort is still underway. The idea was to leverage a crowdfunding campaign to get the people, the general population involved in raising money to help fund the application process, which is really expensive and involved. And the campaign didn't go very well. I think we... It was a very big, difficult idea to get across. And, you know, we learned a lot from it not going very well. But that didn't deter the efforts of Mark Ritchie and his team, who are all pursuing that as a goal. And I know that the current World's Fair is happening right now this summer in Milan, Italy. And I know some people that were involved that are involved in the Expo 2023 project have gone over there already and just been blown away by what's happening. So this World's Fair thing is very real. It's still happening around the world. We don't have it here, but the effort to bring it to Minnesota is still very much underway. I just don't know the latest on how they're doing and where they are with their application, but I believe all that stuff is due this fall.
So they're not letting go of it.
Not letting go. I think the crowdfunding campaign was a way to kind of open this up to the general population, something that really had never been opened up that way. It's always been something that a few key people in areas that, you know, have business interests that would be furthered by having something like that. You know, they come together, and that's still happening. But yeah, the crowdfunding campaign didn't really catch on, but they're still going.
Great.
Interesting.
And I think they'll find out by 2016, next year, I guess, is when they'll make a decision on where that 2023 World's Fair will be. So you can keep an eye out for news on that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And there's more cool starter kit stuff happening. The one we're working on right now is really amazing. And I tell you, I'm just like this little kind of VC that's not a VC, but you know, the interest in people finding ways to tell their stories in the crowdfunding context, when they realize that it's not that easy to do, and coming and sharing their ideas with us and what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis is remarkable. So anytime you guys want to talk about that stuff, I'm more than happy to join you again.
Sounds great.
That sounds great. Well, thanks for being on today, Marty.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling me up. Have a great Father's Day weekend. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take
care.
You
too. You can take
the kids off mute now if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're chomping up a bit. All right, unmuting.
Unmuting. Thanks.
Talk to you guys soon.
See you, Marty.
See you later, Marty. Thanks.
Oh, man. Yeah, I didn't hear any slaps, so that's good.
Well, you told him to mute, and he did. So
yeah, that's nice. So are there any other tips?
I was going to say he must have given him some really good candy to keep him busy or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he probably put on some DVDs like show. I used to do.
There you go.
You know, the electronic babysitter stuff. So
yeah,
hey, it works.
The electronic babysitter.
So Neiman Lab did a, first off, you released at BuzzFeed a new news app that I know I said some nice things about on Facebook.
Yes, you did. You did say some nice things.
I like it.
Did you mean it or were you?
I actually meant it. I'm not a big fan of a lot of news apps because of the way they aggregate and how they do it and how hard it is to share. And so I really like that.
Good. I'm glad. So, yeah, we did release the first ever news app from BuzzFeed. It's just part of the strategy as BuzzFeed continues to grow and kind of become a little more diverse in its thinking. It's that move from, what has made, was the start of BuzzFeed, which was the lists and the gifts and the cats and the things like that, but has morphed over the years into a much different sort of shared experience for entertainment mostly, and then news as Ben Smith joined the company and started to build up the editorial and the news team. And so, it's really great. It's more than just, the news articles from BuzzFeed put into one app. And we can talk a little bit more about that in my cool thing of the week because I had to pick it. So, that's,
you could have picked my mobile news app that I wrote.
Did you write one?
No. Oh, okay. No, I didn't, but
I'd like to.
Yeah.
Since I use the very unpopular Android operating system and this is only iPhone, how does this compete with other news apps? I mean, what are the key features that set you apart?
Well, I think the key features are not only is it the actual news story itself that is linked into, but there's also the ability that the editors have to provide more to that story, whether it's from social media sources like Facebook and Twitter and things like that, but also the ability to highlight and bullet point certain things and really make it very easy to share the news. And there's also a little bit of what I would consider a more millennial style the way people use news these days, a little bit more bite size. It's not an endless continuous feed that goes on forever and ever. There's a limited number of stories that appear in the feed that the BuzzFeed editorial department considers the things that you really should know about. And it's not, again, it's not constantly scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. You get to the end and you say, yeah, basically you're caught up. One of the big features that has gotten a lot of interest from the press is the quickly catch up feature, which is, basically just a bulleted point list at the top of the page. And, here's what the big news stories are. And it's usually like four or five different things, depending on what's breaking and this, happening in the world. So.
Well, I'm assuming you've been working on this for some time. When you saw the Apple News app come out at WWDC, did this kind of change your view of how this app would look? Or
it's interesting because we were sitting there, watching the WWDC keynote, and then that came up, and we all kind of looked at each other like, "What the?
What? Yeah.
Same reaction as Flipboard had."
Yeah, it's like, we're actually part of that whole Apple ecosystem, so we work very closely with Apple. So I'm guessing there was no surprise to anybody, but we'll have to see what the news app is actually like from Apple, see where that goes. But it's really very exciting to be part of this sort of a launch. We've been working on it not as long as you might think.
When are you going to do the Android version then?
The Android version will be out probably before you know it. It's moving along very well. So I think they're saying a couple of months, but I think it'll be, I can't say for sure, but I think it'll be sooner than that. So, Yeah, and we're just doing some really great things on you know, what's actually in the App Store now. You know, obviously was submitted for their review, gosh, 2-3 weeks ago. Made a lot of different things and a lot of different improvements and changes to it already that are even going to make that process even more enhanced. And again, it's just a matter of getting all that reviewed by Apple. So
I saw in one of the stories it referenced that BuzzFeed is continuing to hire journalists like mad over the place. And I clicked through to the page and I saw, oh yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And of course, not in Minneapolis, though.
No,
only the mobile jobs were listed in Minneapolis.
Yeah, right now we're strictly a tech shop, so we only do the technology portion of work for BuzzFeed, and which has paid off immensely. Has been an incredible ride. I think we talked a little bit about the fact that we've grown to about 30 employees already. So it's really great to be part of the Minneapolis tech scene. But yeah, there are no plans to do any editorial or marketing or any of the other functionalities of BuzzFeed here in Minneapolis, at least that I'm aware of. It's been well accepted and received by the public, so we're really very excited. And you know, it's also been very well received by the press, which not something that always happens. So we're really pretty proud of it. And we actually started, Tim, we actually started working on that project. February is when we joined in, and that's when it really sort of took off. I think they started it if you look at some of the articles, there was a beta available or an alpha available for fairly quickly around, I believe, January. So, and in February we got in and you started building in earnest. And it was probably the biggest team I've ever worked with on a single application.
That's great.
It's very cool.
Well, I think
the article that you've got linked in here is the discussion about how it was developed really in the open. It wasn't, oh, we're going to build this and then put it in the App Store and see if people like it. But it was very much built in the open with a lot of people on our beta testing team, but also a lot of sharing between those beta users via Facebook. We did a lot of blogging about it. We talked a lot about the process of why we decided to do this and not do that. So.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to do it. And you know, it kind of harkens back to what Google did originally with Gmail, which surprised everybody that they essentially put it out there and said it's beta. And they were the first ones that did that, right, with a web app.
Yeah.
And it's a good, I mean, hey, just be open about it and this is what we're doing and make it the best product you can. So I think that was great. I think you guys should get into the password management business, though. Yeah, this is probably the biggest story.
So my question is, have you stopped using LastPass? LastPass?
Not a chance. No, no. Mm-hmm. And okay, so here's what it was for everybody listening. There was a hack of the cloud-based LastPass, which exposed the hashed master passwords. And there's a great article we'll link to in Ars Technica that really goes through it and talks about how they do it and all of that. They've got this multi-stage process to everything's encrypted at the desktop level and then sent in. Well, of course, the concern was if a hacker can guess the master password, then they can unhash the encrypted stuff and get into everything. Well, guess what? For those of us who use two-factor authentication, don't have to worry, because unless that hacker has our phones as well, they're not going to be able to get into the vault, the secure vault. But there was a really interesting comment in the bottom too that talked about the iterations that they go through. And so at the client side, before a encrypted hash is actually sent to LastPass, it goes through 100,000 iterations. And you can configure that as well. So I've added another 50,000 myself. But so anyway, I'm not worried about it, although I was actually kind of pissed off that this happened this past Friday, and I didn't find out about it until, of all things, a Mashable article
Wait a minute.
Which came out late Sunday.
I didn't think you followed Mashable anymore.
Well, it's just in my newsfeed. I haven't taken it out.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't like going to it, especially on my iPad, because the doggone ads keep loading and changing. And every time it does, it flips me back up to the top of the page. I just hate that. But anyway.
And
there is this age old debate of, you know, do you use 1Password or the open source KeePass locally and keep everything local, or do you keep it in the cloud and, you know, some combination thereof? But, you know, we all know that, especially if you're on a Windows PC, that you're more likely to have your machine hacked than not. And so that would expose everything. And then where do you keep it? And then what if your house burns down and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so the two-factor authentication, I think, is probably the best way to do it, as long as you also don't use that same master password for your email and you don't have two-factor authentication on your email. So I've got 2FA on LastPass and 2FA on my email. And so, you know, I feel pretty protected, actually. Gives me warm fuzzies.
It gives you... There you go. Well, you know, this would be a good segue right to security tip of the week, don't you think, Steve?
Is there one? I guess, let's see.
Steve's security tip of the week.
All right. Well, there actually is a security tip of the week, and the tip is from the NSA, of all people, about how to keep your home network safe.
And
I wanted to bring this up for two reasons. No, actually,
install our backdoor software.
exactly. Yeah, let us know your IP address. Don't do any Mac address spoofing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Make sure you send us your remote access setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And email above your password all. To NSA.gov. Yeah. But no, seriously, it was actually pretty good. So, I mean, they talk about migrating to a modern operating system and having a security suite and, you know, don't use your admin account to be the primary user, you know, have one, but then set up a separate account that's not admin and, you know, use a PDF reader and browser with sandboxing capabilities like Chrome or Safari, et cetera, and keep your software updated. So, I mean, you know, it was actually some pretty good tips. What I thought was interesting about this was that they actually put in here, implement full disk encryption on laptops. And this is something I am very high on. So either use Microsoft's BitLocker or Apple's File Vault, or if you run Linux, there's one called Lux. And really gives me great peace of mind, because I carry around a 2 terabyte external drive. But that also is encrypted through File Vault connected to my Mac. So even if somebody steals that drive, they're not going to get into it. Everything's encrypted. So it's especially on a laptop, because the things are so doggone portable. It's a really great way to do it. I also am going to put a link in the show notes to a small business cyber planner. This is kind of a bogus. This is kind of a bonus link. Was that a Freudian slip?
It could be.
This is from the FCC, of all people, but I went through it and I thought, you know, a lot of this stuff for anybody that does any kind of security stuff is fairly basic, but I love checklists. You know, they started off in healthcare and sponges and stuff wouldn't be left in somebody after surgery, you know, things like that. But it really does go through ways to plan to make sure that your small business is secure. So I thought that was really really worth it. So there it is.
Good deal.
My tip of the week. So we have to know people's cool thing of the week.
And I love that. You know, should we ever, I often wonder if we should have some sort of a hipster intro to this feature, but you know, you got the horses for your tip of the week.
What a sweeper. We need a sweeper. We
need a sweeper.
Okay.
Well, that's right, Chip. We need a sweeper here.
You know,
hey, the morning zoo.
Maybe a jingle. How about a jingle?
You know, you just put forth a challenge. You understand that?
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right.
That's all right. Well, go for it, dude.
Well,
I could see Steve now hiring jingle singers.
Yeah.
The cool thing of the week.
Yeah. Acapella. All right. Well, Graham, since you were up at the lake last week and you're here now, I'm sure your cool thing of the week is not jammies with ducks on them.
No, it's not. No. Okay. I was going to send you guys a photo of my actual jammies standing in front of the lake, but I never got around to rousting up the wife to shoot a picture of me. But anyway, the cool thing of the week. So I actually have a real gadget this week, unlike previous weeks. For all my friends out there who are Star Trek fans, and I know there are many of them, I am not particularly, but I saw this and I thought, whoa, this is cool. It's the iPhaser, an Apple-styled Star Trek phaser. And I thought particularly Julio would love this.
Oh, yes. And
it's a designer in the Netherlands who's, styled the phaser with all of the iconic design elements from Apple's products. It's really cool when you look at all the photos. It looks like something that Apple would have designed. It's just wild. So, there you go,
But it's an actual working laser pointer, right?
Well, yeah, I guess it sure implies that here. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So cool. I don't know if it's for sale, or I assume it is, but
I think, yeah, it looks like it's like it's got a USB port on the back of it. That is.
Yeah. We'll put a link in the show notes so everybody can see that photo.
If it's for sale, I'd be willing to bet that Julio already has one on the way.
Yeah, probably.
I like how they have the Galactic Federation logo on one side and the Apple logo on the other.
And the Apple logo on the other.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Funny. It's great.
It's even, it's got the little disclaimer, copyright text for Apple right below it, like you'd find on the back of your iPhone. I love that.
Well, Phil, you can talk about your app for a sec, but then you actually have a real cool thing, right?
Well, I threw one in here because we did talk a lot about the BuzzFeed News app, which I would encourage you to please go take a look at and download it. If for no other reason to help me win a bet. So that's
right. So, will do.
And it's only $19.99 in the App Store?
No, it's free.
That's right. It's free. I forgot.
Jeez. Gosh, you kids are rock and roll. But yes, it's a great app. So do take a look at it. I think you'll enjoy a lot of it delivers solid hard news, and it's also got it's got that still that BuzzFeed vibe, but it's I think it really, you really will feel like it's the kind of news you need. It's that quick catch up. So
are you saying that there's cat gifts as well?
No, there are no cat gifts. You talk about, it's interesting because we talk about these sorts of things that what are the things that will differentiate it from BuzzFeed, yet you want it to be, have that same sort of voice. You do want to, you want to give the whatever application or even a show, an app, a movie, it's got to have that voice. It has to have a sort of a voice that you can count on. And I think that the people that we used in the beta test groups and things like that to help us give a voice to BuzzFeed, there are still, it's as if you're watching, if you watch the 10 o'clock news, there's every once in a while, there's a warm puppy story beyond the hard news. So anyway, that's, go ahead and pick that up.
So your cool thing?
My cool, well, I think.
Besides that,
I found this really cool voice activated smart grill. So the Internet of Things now becomes the Internet of Meat. So,
well, I looked at that and I thought it would be really cool if you could put sensors in the meat so it would scream at you and say, "Hey, stupid, the chicken is done, but the brats aren't."
Flip me.
Exactly. But it doesn't, I couldn't see where it did that. Does it do that?
I don't know. I hadn't okay. spent a ton of time with it other than just, I think Steve would like this. It
starts at $6,000 and goes up to $9,500.
I'll get two of them.
It's
come on.
Yeah. It's really very.
I'll put one on either side of the deck.
It's very state
chicken on one, brats on the other.
There you go.
Flip me. All right, yeah. All right, Tim.
I don't even think Bobby Flay has a $6,000 grill.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. You never can tell.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, so mine is a project that's over at Adafruit, which sells lots of supplies for your Raspberry Pi and Arduino needs, and they have one that's I found this week called the Mini Raspberry Pi Handheld Notebook, which is a 3D printed case, a very small display, and an extremely small Bluetooth keyboard, all in this really kind of nice little package. Completely impractical, but yeah. if you had a kid, you know, if you had a 10 or 11 year old kid, this would be a perfect thing for them to learn, you know, just about computers and programming and whatever. So
it looks very Game Boy style.
I was just going to say that. It is evocative of a Game Boy. Yeah.
Yep. And you could set up that, and you could put MAME on it or other emulators, and you could play, you know, video games on it.
Right.
With the Raspberry Pi 2, it's actually a fairly high powered machine, so you could do, you know, some real stuff with it and use it just like a little laptop if you wanted. But I just saw this project and I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, no kidding.
$45.
What Tim, are you tinkering a lot with Raspberry Pi now and Arduino?
Yeah, I still have some older ones. I haven't bought a 2 yet. I've been meaning to pick one up, but I've got a few little projects here and there.
What give us a highlight of one of your favorite little projects that you tinkered at most?
Well, one is I've created out of some old speakers that I had years ago, and they were in storage. I just took them, and these are, you know, good quality speakers, and I put a little amplifier inside of it and a Raspberry Pi, and put on a distribution that's called, what is it called, Pi Music Box, which gives you a headless music server kind of thing, so you can play live streams. So I listen to a lot of Twit stuff via their live stream via this speaker, and you can control it through a web browser, either on your smartphone or tablet or on your computer. So I sit here on my computer and I just turn it on, and I have a nice quality hi-fi speaker that just sits in the room, and it's running off the Raspberry Pi. And, you know, I can also play podcasts from MP3s and music and all that stuff too. So
cool.
Wow. That's a great use for old speakers. I got two sets sitting in my garage, and they're too good to just throw away, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, get an amplifier and a turntable, man, and you'll be happy.
You can get amplifiers off of Amazon, and they're like $15. And they're actually really good quality. So, you know, I just basically plug that in, and it has the hookups that you hook up into the back into the speaker with very short speaker wire. And then, you know, it sounds great.
Well, a guy that worked for me at Lawson, we're connected on social media, of course. And he, through eBay, bought a complete Macintosh stereo system, which is MCINTOSH, but it's a very high end audio.
Very high.
It's all tubes, and it was the whole thing was complete. And he said it was just like nobody had ever used it. You know, they had it all wrapped up and, you know, in dust covers and all that stuff. And he's the only thing he's worried about is the speakers themselves, which you might want to look at, Graham, which is sometimes the paper cones get brittle. Mm. And you crank the sound up, all of a sudden, you know, they crack. And, anyway.
Huh. All right. So did he buy that for? Did he? Oh,
he bought it for the electronics, not the speakers, but yeah. Mm. All right. So
he got it real. Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say my cool thing is the new feature at Dropbox. And what it is you can go in and set up a file request and send it to one or more people. And then they can go to the web page and they can upload up to a 2 gig file. And I looked at that and went, oh my God, that is absolutely amazing. And in fact, I'll put a link into a post I did on my own blog about it. It's really impressive. And so you can, you know, just like you can now on any file in any one of your folders, you can control click on the Mac or right click on the PC, and you can find the shared Dropbox link, and it copies it for you, and then you can paste it into an email, and then you can share a file, people can download it. This is as easy, and I think it's going to really, I think it's going to kill the dedicated FTP. File upload and email services, and FTP and SFTP server kinds of things. You know, there's FileZilla and hosted FTP, and there's also open source FTP servers, but they're just a pain, and the normal humans can't set them up, right? And I think this is going to be huge for these guys. Anyway, so I thought it was cool.
That is a cool thing.
It is.
Let's see, upcoming events. Things are starting to pick up a little bit, a little percolating there going on. So I think, though, looks like this big data executive roundtable is new.
Yeah, I added that. Teradata has been a supporter and sponsor of many analytics events. And this would be something that you apply for. But if you're an executive and interested in big data, it's June 23rd, a breakfast at Radisson Blue Hotel Tuesday.
Yep. And another new one is SRCCon.
Yes, that was, I put that in. It's actually SourceCon. Sculled out. SourceCon. It's a, what is it? Technology and newsrooms come together. I only put that in there because BuzzFeed news app editor is going to be there. So Stacey Ishmael and Billy Tran. So I just kind of put that in there. And it looked like a really kind of an interesting concept of an organization. And, you know, Steve, I don't know, you remember when we went to that citizen journalism event at the McNamara Center?
Yep.
This sort of reminded me of that, but it's sort of where tech meets news and newsrooms. So,
oh, very interesting.
Very cool. So just wanted to kind of highlight it.
And produced then, by Knight Mozilla Open News.
Yeah. It's only the second one. It moves around the country. So
I'm starting to lose control here of which things are new and what aren't.
Oh,
I know that I have a dental cleaning appointment next week. Oh, no, that shouldn't go in. Never mind.
Other ones that I threw in were the Lead Pages event in October and another mini analytics life science event in October as well.
Cool.
Those are pretty far out.
Yes, they are. Far out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Well, I just want to leave everybody with one little factoid, which is clean teeth are happy teeth.
Thank you so much.
Make sure you floss regularly.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's very, very important.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay.
Well, we'll see what happens next week and talk about it on
the Minovate Gang Podcast. Take care.
Have a great weekend.